The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Riding and Rolling. I know it's been about a month, but we are back. I'm your host, Chris Stevens, and want to thank you guys for joining us this week, as always. And once again, Riding and Rolling podcast is a proud member of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. You can find this episode of Riding and Rolling, along with all the others, and a few other great podcasts that you can listen to, such as Crown and Collards, Bad Advice Show, The New Slay, Wrestlecast. All of those great podcasts are available through the Cold Slither Podcast Network. You can go to cspn.us to find out what the team is all about. It's a pretty strong team, and I'm proud to be a part of it. This week's episode, we'll get back into the business. We've kind of been off track because of the devastating results of the presidential election and, you know, work obligations on my end. So we'll get back to business. We'll recap the recently completed Los Angeles Auto Show that saw a few debuts, a few updates, a few interesting concept cars that we'll touch on. We'll also, of course, we'll also have the old school ride of the week, which is, you know, a look back at cars from the past that, you know, are either certified classics, should be classics, or just weird, quirky, and, well, lemons. We cover everything under the spectrum with the old school ride of the week, so stay tuned for that. But in the meantime, let's get it started with news and notes. This week's news and notes segment is brought to you by Amazon.com. Keep our podcast free by shopping at Amazon. Visit cspn.us, then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, scroll down and click on the Amazon link to shop. Purchase items from Amazon as you normally would, whether it's books, music, electronics, jewelry, apparel, and so on. For every purchase made on Amazon through our link, Amazon sends the CSPN a payment, you know, money, dinero, remuneration, ching, hallelujah, all that good stuff. It helps keep our podcast free, especially Riding and Rolling, at no extra cost to you guys. So Amazon through CSPN.us, do it today. Also, if I may cross, you know, promote a little bit, I write books, novels. All of them are found on Amazon. Just look for Chris Stevens, author. You can find the titles. If you want to look for the titles, you can look for I'm Feeling That, Miracles Need Wings to Fly, and Brothers Lunch, and they're all fiction books. All pretty good, if I do say so myself. Or you can read the reviews. They're up. But anyway, yes, Amazon through CSPN.us. Do it today. All right. First item up for news and notes, and is the cord being plugged back in? Could happen next year. It's coming from Antti Kattonen over at Autoblog.com. And Cord was an automotive manufacturer, well, actually an automotive brand that was made by the Auburn Automobile Company from 1929 to 1932 and 1936 to 1937. The L29 was actually the first front-wheel drive vehicle in America. Everyone thinks the 1966 Oldsmobile Toronado was the first. It was the first mass-produced front-wheel drive car. That is correct. But the first one to have it overall was the 1929 Cord L29. But the model that's being talked about now is the 1936 and 37 E10, which was the first instance in the history of the United States of hidden headlights. Why is this important? Because there is a law that says that if you can produce up to 325 reproductions of a model that's 25 years or older and include a full powertrain, then you can have it, basically. So it's like a classic car law. Like if someone was interested in bringing back a certain model or whatever, they could do it for only 325 copies. And that's why a gentleman by the name of Craig Corbell out of Texas is set to relaunch the Cord 810 and 812 at some point later in 2017. He says nothing concrete has been announced, but he said up until now it was cost prohibitive to manufacture these cars profitably, but now the high expensive speed crash testing, for example, is no longer required for manufacturing low runs of replicas. This makes tremendous sense. And that's cool. Because there are a lot of cars in the history of, you know, American automobiles that get, you know, pushed to the side because they're not the big three. And they're not classics, you know, by, you know, the general definition of the word. But there are some, you know, neat, quirky little automobiles out there that I think would be pretty cool under this law. And the law, if you're wondering, if you're curious, is called the Low Volume Motor Vehicle Manufacturers Act. That means 325 copies of a model that's at least 25 years older and includes a full powertrain that doesn't have to submit to the same, you know, crash testing as like the big three and all the, you know, European and Japanese automotive companies that, you know, sell cars here in the United States. I can tell you off the top of my head, I would love for an AMC Gremlin replica. I mean, we've already, you know, talked about the Gremlin for our old school ride a week once upon a time, but there's a lot of interesting cars out there. There's the Gremlin I'm thinking of off the top of my head. People probably would want to see another Edsel, maybe. You know, the Chevy Corvair, you know, the Volkswagen Hebmuller, which didn't really cross 500 anyway. And if you've never seen a Volkswagen Hebmuller, it's pretty much a Beetle with a trunk. A Beetle convertible with a trunk. They made it between 1946 and 1949 and a quick run in 1953 before shutting it down. Probably the sexiest Volkswagen ever made. Probably could say that for the Karmann Ghia, but I think the Hebmuller is cooler. But I would like to see a Hebmuller under this act. But, you know, for Mr. Corbell to say, all right, now that, you know, this law has given me the chance to make money again, I'm going to go for it. It's pretty cool because at some point you're going to start to see that, you know, not everybody has the same takes when it comes to classic automobiles. We prove that over here on Riding and Rolling Daily. So you have people who like different, you know, types of old school cars that don't have the money to, you know, invest in, you know, a 55 Chevy or a 65 Mustang or a Dodge Super B or whatever. It's not in the cards for a lot of people. But these low volume cars, you know, you can, you know, make a pretty penny off of that and still be affordable because not everybody's going to be clamoring for them. Because once you set the mark at 325, that settles it. It's only going to be 325 people that get it. So it's pretty cool of Mr. Corbell to bring back the Cord A10, A12, which was a, you know, a pretty sleekly designed car. If you ever have a chance to Google it, it's pretty sharp. So it's good for him to bring it back. Next up, another reason to be jealous of Europeans and automakers will be combining to start DC charging network for electronic vehicles over in Europe. And this comes from Matteo Petrani over at Road and Track. And Volkswagen, GM, BMW, Daimler, Ford, Fiat, Chrysler, Hyundai, Volvo, Jaguar, Land Rover, they're all doing it. They are giving electronic vehicle buyers over in Europe the charging network they deserve. The joint venture set up by BMW, Daimler, Ford, Audi, and Porsche will deliver a brand independent network with up to 400 locations set up in Europe over the next 3 years. These stations' power levels will also reach up to 350 kilowatts, which is significantly higher than Tesla's 120 kilowatt charging system. Soon enough, DC fast charging will make the coffee break recharging a dream a reality, and Europeans can give a high five to BMW, Daimler, Ford, Audi, and Porsche for speeding up the process on their way towards selling us as many battery electric vehicles as possible. And what's brilliant, I guess Mr. Petrani is from Europe, which is why he's speaking in the, we tense, is that our cities will have much cleaner air and less noise 10 years from now. And I really don't, we don't do politics over here around and rolling, but you have, if you're an American, and if you're, you know, you're green conscious, you have to be damn nervous about the incoming, you know, regime, if you will, of the United States. President Obama believed in going green. He believed in electric vehicles. He believed in, you know, global warming and trying to save what little bit of the ozone layer we got left I don't see that coming in with, that other guy. So if you're a car person and you're watching, you know, Europe and all these other countries, you know, constantly kick our ass in terms of, you know, developing, you know, greenways and, you know, electric, you know, vehicle charging ports and all this stuff that's going to save their piece of the world, you have to be embarrassed. You have to be embarrassed. Because all of the gains that President Obama has made for going green, electric vehicles, and all of that stuff is going to be dead in the water come January 20th. I'm telling you that right now. Along with a lot of other things, but this isn't the podcast for that. But that's cool of, you know, all those automakers to, you know, show Europe that they care about the state of the planet, at least in that part of the world. Not saying they don't care here, but they wouldn't be given a chance to care here. And more electric-related news. I can't see you guys, but if I ask you for a show of hands, how many of you have kids that absolutely love the Cars franchise of movies? I can imagine some hands going up, because I have quite a few nieces and nephews who actually love the antics of Lightning McQueen and his crew. So Cars 3 is going electric. Coming from Alex Nishimoto of Automobile Magazine. Disney Pixar is at it again, reentering the automotive world with the third installment of Cars animated movie franchise. First movie was the instant classic. The second one, not so much. Judging by the short teaser that was just released, Cars 3 could be a return to form for the film series that celebrates racing and car culture. The clip's only 49 seconds long, but it's filled with drama. On a paved oval racetrack, the series' main character, Lightning McQueen, is leading a race. The usual V8 sounds echo off the retaining walls, but then we hear the distinct whine of an electric motor and see a futuristic vehicle cut its way through the field. A commentator announces that there's trouble up front just before McQueen loses control and tumbles through the air in slow motion. We're left with a single foreboding caption. From this moment, everything will change. Pretty dark for a movie talking about cars. As short as the trailer is, it has us intrigued. Will this be Cars 3, The Eternal Combustion Engine Strikes Back? Or will it be If You Can't Beat Him, Join Him, Embrace of a New Era of Electric Racing? How will McQueen come back from this? As long as Secret Agent Mater isn't involved, we're anxious to find out next summer. Yeah, that's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. I think, you know, kids need to understand, you know, what's happening in the world. And for an electric car to make its debut in a classic kids movie, a potential classic kids movie, you start to educate them through entertainment. And Cars has always been a pretty fun group of movies to me anyway. I like the second one personally, but that's just me. That's because I love corny shit. Kids, they don't like corny shit too much. You got to make it cool for them. And Cars 2, if I asked my nephew or my niece, they didn't think it was cool. Hopefully Cars 3 will be cool, especially now they're talking about, you know, electric racing cars. Lastly, Toyota cares about your health. This comes from Justin T. Westbrook over at Jalopnik.com. And according to a patent filed last week, Toyota has revealed plans to introduce fitness tracking and health goals into your vehicle's infotainment center. The filing describes an application in the car that connects with something to your phone to receive whatever fitness goals you are out to achieve. Based on the goal, the car will consider your location and make a suggestion to help you reach your goal. The example given in the filing has your car reminding you how out of shape you are by suggesting you park around the corner from your 800-calorie coffee shop to get some extra steps in. Look, now, this is funny to me because everybody that knows me knows that I've been involved in a battle of the bulge for basically my entire adult life. I walk between 4 to 6 miles a day, and I've picked up a new frenemy in the 12-minute kettlebell workouts. So I'm busting my ass to try to get this weight off. So here's the funny thing. I don't want my car reminding me of anything that I'm doing whatsoever. This is not something that I'm particularly fond of. I don't want my car telling me, hey, Chris, I know you're going to Panera Bread, but if you park around, no. Chris, you're going to Walmart for another cup of Talenti sea salt caramel. Would you like to walk from the, no. Chris, I know that you're going to be covering a high school basketball game tonight and they serve Chick-fil-A in the concession area. Would you like to walk around the court instead of, you know, on the court at halftime? No. No, don't do it. Don't tell me. Don't make me feel guilty about trying to cheat. I need cheat days. Cheat days are what make working out relevant for me anyway. Can't speak for anybody else. But this is pretty damn funny. I mean, Toyota, you know, always has been ahead of the curve in a lot of stuff that they've done, but I think this might piss a few people off. Because you don't want your car, you know, shaming you into working out. But it'll be interesting if this patent does go down, because I really would like to see how Toyota manages to, you know, explain this, or at least, you know, make this plausible in commercials. Because it could make for some pretty funny commercials. That much we know for sure. The game is mine. I'm gonna spell my name one more time. Check it. It's the NOTORIOUS. You just lay down slow. Recognize a real dawn when you see one. Sipping on booze in the house of blues. I'm going back to Cali. 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 If I got to choose the coast, I got to choose the east. I live out there, so don't go there. But that don't mean a nigga can't rest in the west. See some nice breasts in the west. Smoke some nice sets in the west. Y'all niggas is a mess, thinking I'm gonna stop. Give it L.A. props. All I got is beef with those that violate me. I shall annihilate thee. Case closed, suitcase filled with clothes. Linens and things, I'll begin things. People start to flash, 818-213s, 313s, B.I.G.
The oldest auto show in these United States and possibly the world just wrapped up Sunday in the City of Angels. As far as previews of what to expect in Detroit in January go, the Los Angeles Auto Show definitely delivered some fun and some funky looks that only leave you wondering what the rest of the automotive world has in store for the North American International Auto Show in the Motor City come next year. We'll get started, for starters, with Toyota, who decided that the Honda HR-V, the Jeep Compass, and the Chevy Trax / Buick Encore couldn't have all the cute utility fun, so they unveiled the 2018 CHR. CHR, of course, stands for Coupe High Rider, and the CHR does just that, sitting up high in profile with the rear of the vehicle designed with a more upward swing as the cabin has a lower profile, giving it more of an aggressive look. Toyota equipped the CHR with a 144 horsepower 2.0 liter inline four that has a CVT which is known as a continuously variable transmission that will improve acceleration and fuel economy while reducing the noise inside the car. In sport mode, the CVT will simulate a traditional 7-speed automatic that goes through gears faster, keeps the engine at higher speeds for its enhanced acceleration, and the driver can also choose to shift those gears by pushing the lever to the left of the actual transmission, you know, valve. That in itself is interesting because to me, Toyota never really struck me as a brand that would, you know, involve itself in the cute ute department. I mean, granted, you could say the RAV4 was the original cute ute many years ago, but it got bigger. The 4Runner eventually got bigger and was replaced by the Sequoia, which is a monster in itself. And actually, the Sienna is a minivan. I take that back. But either way, Toyota just continues to stay ahead of the curve as best they can. See our earlier segment about the Fitbit going inside your vehicle, possibly if you own a new Toyota. But it's pretty cool for Toyota to, you know, abandon tradition and say, all right, we can do whatever it is you guys can do and possibly do it better. So we are looking forward to the Toyota CHR, which will drop either in April or May of this coming year. Volkswagen took its time working on the Touareg replacement, but the Atlas seems to be well worth the wait. You guys might remember it as the wildly unpopular Cross Blue concept. Like, everywhere you turn, everyone had a bad word for the Volkswagen Cross Blue. And it was just a concept. We all just looked at each other like, the hell is this? Like, what are we supposed to do with this? It's not as cool looking as the Touareg. It's not as small and cute as the Tiguan. That's the point. This is a three-row seat, six-cylinder SUV with a design that's neat and clean that doesn't do too much. Actually, the narrow-angle V6 is just one of the options. They have a transverse mount four-cylinder engine as an option as well for those who really aren't big on, you know, the power. They just want to get from A to B. It'll be pretty cool for Toyota to get in the big SUV market, you know, with this new Atlas. But I think they know that they're going to need a few more creature comforts and possibly some innovation to make it an SUV contender because, as we already know, the SUV market is already oversaturated as is. Apparently, the Atlas will come with 18 cup holders, which could be pretty cool, you know, being that, you know, this will probably be a vehicle geared towards soccer moms and traveling families and, you know, kids, and, you know, they have all these sports drinks and different things now. So now you got somewhere to put them. So kudos to Volkswagen, excuse me, for, you know, refining the Cross Blue, turning it into the Atlas and making it a possibly palatable SUV for anyone in the market for one. Speaking of niche vehicles, Chevrolet has now told Toyota, we see you, and we got something for you. Now that the Colorado ZR2 pickup is here, it will definitely be in direct competition with Toyota's Tacoma TRD. And what separates the ZR2 from normal Colorado is the suspension. Chevy teamed up with Multimatic suspensions for dynamic suspension spool valves, valve dampers, DSSV. The very same suspension dampers that were found in the Chevy Camaro Z28. So yeah, if you want some sports car with your small fun pickup truck with some off-road swag to it, you'll definitely like the Chevy Colorado ZR2. It comes with the normal Colorado engines, you know, the 308 horsepower 3.6 liter V6 that, you know, goes well with the 8-speed transmission. So it's not that different from the normal Colorado, but beefing up the suspension and, you know, giving it a more aggressive, sporty, fun look, you know, for off-roading as well as, you know, utilitarian purposes like carrying stuff from A to B. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. You come up for Chevy, and GM, you know, needs, you know, all the good news that they can get, you know, especially now that, you know, we're still waiting on the quote unquote Wrangler fighter that's going to be GMC and GMC market only. So this is a good start for General Motors as a whole, you know, and to get themselves in competition with the forthcoming Wrangler pickup, actually, and, you know, the Toyota Tacoma TRD. Lastly, and as we've said before, the name brand Cadillac has always been thought of as a brand of opulence and luxury. But can you be opulent and luxurious while chilling at the recharge station? Definitely about to find out as Caddy pulled the cover off a 2017 CT6 2.0E plug-in hybrid in LA. And yes, that is the car's full name, not the NLA part. The engine is GM's 2.0-liter turbo 4, which gets a few alterations, and including a higher idle speed, 1,400 RPM versus 950, that allows it to generate power for the battery pack at idle. The different power peaks of the electric and gas machines' combined output will be, you know, slotted at around 335 horsepower and 432 pound-feet of torque. Electricity comes and goes with an 18.4 kilowatt an hour lithium-ion battery pack, which is pretty much the same battery as the Chevy Bolt EV, and it's put behind the rear setbacks. It gets loaded in from below. Lower tray is a structural settlement. The pack itself weighs 400 pounds, so it's no, you know, sleeping giant. And it makes the weight distribution, you know, 44-56 front rear, you know, weight distribution. And it really, in the battery pack itself, also takes up 5 feet of cubic space. So if you're really looking to load stuff in the CT6 2.0E plug-in hybrid, I'm just going to call it the CT6 Charger because I can't say all of that and really, you know, keep this, you know, podcast, you know, at a, you know, brisk pace. So from now on in, if we talk about it, it'll just be the CT6 plug-in. Yeah, the CT6 plug-in. I was calling the Charger. I just called the Charger. Yeah, we'll just call it the CT6 plug-in. There you go. But as Cadillac, you know, continues to make itself, you know, a brand in demand, you know, taking it from AARP to South by Southwest, that, you know, it's time for them to, you know, think green and think, you know, conscious of the environment. And we all know everybody that drove a Cadillac when we were growing up or even before then, you know, they were gas guzzlers, they were Lambos. My mom used to say the front end of a Cadillac, it would come around the corner 10 minutes before the rest of the car does. That's not so anymore. It hasn't been so probably for about 35 years. But in the meantime, it's a pretty good look for Cadillac, you know, to put their sportiest sedan in the electric vehicle market, because that's a market that we'll find increasingly easier to tap and, you know, profit from and prosper from in the coming years. And of course, this is just a small sample of what you'll be able to expect at NAIS NAIAS 2017, when the entire automotive industry will put fresh concepts, new models, and redesigned bestsellers on display. Apparently, we just found out, you know, while we're recording this, that the 2018 Toyota Camry will be unleashed at, you know, NAIAS. So, really looking forward to that. Detroit is like the automotive industry version of Woodstock. But LA is Monterey Pop Festival all the way. You had to have a Monterey before you could get to a Woodstock. And not surprisingly, LA provided a few interesting looks that will give automotive powers that be about a good 8 weeks, because I think it starts around the 18th or the 19th of January. And hopefully, you know, they'll be having themselves ready for showtime in Detroit. And with competition at an all-time high, a lot of car and truck makers need to show up and show out. And that can only be a good thing for automotive, you know, customers going forward.
See, it ain't just a car. It ain't just a wheel. It's a time machine. It's a spaceship. It's precious. You gotta take your time. You can't be rubbing on them curves, hitting them potholes.
Week time, and I'm feeling really nostalgic this week, probably because it's the last 4 weeks and change of 2016, so it's another year in the books, and 2017 means, you know, new opportunities, new chances for different things, but it's never a bad time to look back, especially on the good times, especially with a car that you remember, a car that you had good times in, or just your first car. So, with that being said, we're gonna give love to the old school ride of the week. For this week, the love actually goes to the Mitsubishi Diamante, which was my very first car. And I have fond memories of that car in general. But the Diamante, we'll go with the Diamante, you know, the specifics of it itself. The Diamante was actually introduced in Japan first, because of course that's where Mitsubishi born, raised, located, so on and so on and so forth. In the fall of 1989 is a 1990 model. The United States and North America didn't get it until the spring of 91, which made it a 92. So we haven't always had cars that, you know, were, you know, the model year didn't always start in October, but now it almost never starts in October because that's usually when it used to start. The model year for, like, you know, for example, like, you know, if you wanted to introduce a car with introduce the 1988, you know, Chevy Cavalier or something, you would have done it in September of 1987. But anyway, the Diamante itself is not exactly a luxury car, but it definitely isn't your standard entry-level compact sedan. It also had a station wagon model. The first generation did anyway, from a 92 to about 96. It was a 95. It was a station wagon model that, you know, that's like that's one of the unicorns of Japanese imported American-driven automobiles. Like, if you see a Mitsubishi Diamante first-generation station wagon, snap a picture. If you see a Box Max station wagon, snap a picture. Which reminds me, I really messed up one day a couple weeks ago. Actually, a little bit before Thanksgiving. I was out running errands, and I saw a Box Max station wagon, and I left my camera at home. So upset. But if you want to see all of my car photos, you can find me on Instagram at CJWrightsAndThangs. As you'll see on the Cold Slither description page of this podcast. Back to the Diamante, though. Luxurious four-door sedan. You know, not exactly, you know, a price leader, but not exactly, you know, too expensive for anyone's taste. The four-door sedan, you know, was obviously the most popular. It was known in Japan as the Sigma, but as Diamante everywhere else. You had the choices of a 2.0 liter V6, a 2.5 liter V6, and a 3.0 liter 3.6. Mine was the 2.5, and that was probably the most problematic engine I have ever driven in my life. Technically, it is, because it also was the same engine that was in my piece of crap Dodge Stratus, which of course was the last car I owned a couple years ago. But when that car was running good, it was running good. It was a beautiful thing. And the second generation actually proved to be more popular. It lasted 10 years. The Diamante, you know, got a fresh restyle. It, you know, it tightened up the corners in the rear of the car. It smoothed out the edges up front. And the wagon, unfortunately, was discontinued in the United States, but continued on in Japan. The engine choices were the 2.5 liter V6, 3.0 liter V6, and a new 3.5 liter V6. You also had your choices of a 4-speed or 5-speed automatic. So, the Diamante was really like one of the first Mitsubishis to have that, you know, geared towards a more, you know, settled kind of set, if you will. Like, the first generation had a manual transmission, but that really wasn't popular to begin with. So that's probably why Mitsubishi dropped it and just said, all you get with Diamantes now is an automatic transmission. And they were, you know, they never really established themselves as, you know, one of the more classic, you know, Japanese import cars, you know, because obviously, you know, you had the Honda Accord sedan, the Toyota Camry sedan, and the Nissan Maxima in direct competition. So the Diamante was kind of like, you know, the third cousin of mid-90s Japanese imported sedans. But they were pretty, you know, sweet-looking cars. And for the most part, if you didn't get the 2.5-liter V6, kind of reliable. Actually very reliable. So the actual overall lifespan of the Diamante nameplate lasted from 1990 to 2005. So you really have to be on your P's and Q's to find one, because around here, they get snatched up so fast. Like, I really wanted a second generation one after I lost my last car, but then, my employment got downgraded. I had some family issues I had to work out that I'm still working on, and I'm still trying to put the, you know, coins together to get myself, you know, back riding and rolling as we speak. Which hopefully means at some point I'll be able to monetize this podcast. So if you know anybody out there that's in the automotive world that wants to advertise, ridingrolling@gmail.com, hit us up. But anyway, the Diamante is a perfect example of what, you know, Japanese cars were able to give American customers that, you know, the big three for a long time did not. You got luxury. You got, you know, gas mileage. You got performance, and you got it at a price that didn't cost you your first or second born. So, kudos to the Mitsubishi Diamante. And if you want to know about my first Mitsubishi Diamante, as we sign off the air this particular afternoon, I will tell you guys that it was the first car I ever owned. It was a birthday gift from my family way back in 2004. And I was, you know, closing down my time at Delaware State University. I was still working for a school paper. I was still, you know, interning and hustling in Delaware State News. I was doing a lot of stuff. And I couldn't do it without a vehicle. I couldn't get an internship without a vehicle. But once, you know, my family pulled together and said, we got something for you. We're going to have something for you for your birthday. And I had heard this before. Because, you know, 16 to 21, 22, you're like, yeah, okay, whatever, right? You know, another year, another promise, no car. I will just have to, you know, try to stack my bread as much as I can, buy a hoopty, see what happens. Instead, mom called me Friday before a game. Because usually Delaware State had home football games on Saturday afternoon, so Fridays was just me and myself and I chilling. She said, "How fast can you get on the bus?" I said, "Pretty quickly." Because I wondered if something was wrong, so she just met me at the train station after I got off the bus. You know, the inner county. If you're a Delaware State graduate alum, you know, from Philly or New York or New Jersey, you know all about the inner county trying to get to the Amtrak train station, boy. But I get home and she's got this, you know, Cheshire Cat grin on her face. And I'm like, what the hell is going on here? I know it's nothing wrong because she's not upset. She's not, you know, disturbed or anything. She's just laughing and smiling at me the whole way. And I'm like, wait a minute, we're not going home. Because there was a DMV, Department of Motor Vehicle, out 273-896 at the time. And I said, what are we doing here? And sure enough, out the inspection lane comes a wine gold-colored Mitsubishi Diamante. I literally fell out in the parking lot. I literally just sat on the ground and watched that, and watched my mom's mechanic friend bring the car around and say, sign the title. It's yours. Like, that easy? Like, yeah, we just, you know, we found it at the auction. You know, it passed inspection. Your mom's got some insurance set up for you. Sign on. I was like, oh, shit. This is really happening. So that car lasted me from October of 2004 to July of 2006 when the speed sensor got broke, but I couldn't fix it because I didn't have a job then and I didn't know it was the speed sensor. So after I, you know, went back to school to finish up because I couldn't take the car with me because it wouldn't go over 30 miles an hour, my mom moved and she said, I will take the car with me around the corner to where she was moving. I was like, that's fine. So we had these really asshole neighbors who used to complain about the car taking up a space, and eventually they got it towed. And my mother was so, you know, discouraged about it. And I was too. But overall, the memories in that car outlast how it ended or how much work we had to put into it to keep it running. Because I can still remember going from Dover to Richmond to Hampton to D.C., Baltimore, New Jersey, Philadelphia. I drove that car up and down the Eastern Seaboard when it was running right. I didn't give a damn. I was young. I was in college. I had extra money to spare because I was hustling, you know, a couple jobs on campus and having an internship. I was rolling. I was riding and rolling. So that really, you know, is why I chose Mitsubishi Diamante this week. Number one, because I just scrapped this show together because I wanted to make sure I didn't go a full month without talking to you guys. Because as you know, we said at the outset, this was a November was a devastating month, you know, for those of us who are black, poor, and, you know, really not going to have a, you know, a solid place in America come the middle of January. So it's kind of nerve-wracking. So I took November to finish up my NaNoWriMo project. As you guys know, I'm an author. And I, you know, was busy with my freelance job. My freelance job kept me stacked. Like, I was surprised to get as much work as I did last month. I'm glad I did because I needed something to take my mind off my troubles and the stress of, you know, the country being turned over to you know who. But, you know, just having the memories here, sitting here this morning, you know, finishing up the show, talking about what is going to be the old school ride of the week. Because we've done, you know, we've done Toyota. I mean, we've done, you know, the Subaru Brat. We've done the Model T. We've done the International Scout, AMC Gremlin, Chevy Camaro, Monte Carlo. Where could we go from here? And then I realized, you know, we haven't really, you know, talked about anything Mitsubishi. And of course, my first car was a Mitsubishi that I loved very much. So I was like, yeah, let's go with that. And that is our old school ride of the week, the 1990 to 2005 Mitsubishi Diamante. Wouldn't call it a collector's item, but if it's a pretty good car if you want to get from A to B and you like a little style with your mid-level Japanese sedan. And that's it for this week's edition of Riding and Rolling. Thank you all for listening every week. As always, greatly appreciate you. If you want to follow us on Twitter, find us there, Riding and Rolling. Same as the same on Facebook, facebook.com/Riding and Rolling. This episode will be up on our SoundCloud as well as the CSPN SoundCloud and the CSPN website. Also, if you want to connect with me on Twitter, you can find me at CJ Writes and Things. That's CJ, W-R-I-T-E-S, the letter N, Thangs, T-A-N-G-S. That's also my Instagram. And I also have a Facebook page for my authoring. So you can just facebook.com/Chris Stevens Writes, C-H-R-I-S-S-T-E-V-E-N-S-W-R-I-T-E-S. Okay, thank you guys for listening. Always appreciate it. Y'all enjoy your weekend. And you know, don't kill each other out there, you know, during that holiday shopping. Until we speak again, y'all be good. I'll be good at it.